Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Westside Visions on Blog Talk Radio. I am Brother Tony Bullock, and thank you for stepping in tonight. As you know, once again, the country we live in is doing the most. The Republican Party continues to just lead us down a path that makes absolutely, positively no sense. Every time you turn around, there's something crazy going on, and we will talk about several of those things tonight, because as you know, they keep us going down a path that is just absolutely crazy. And before we get deep into tonight, condolences to the family of actor Andre Brower, who we have learned has passed away. Andre was one of those actors that gave you 100%. Every time he stepped out there, he has won Emmy Awards for the shows that he's been in. I mean, first show I remember him being in was Homicide, Life on the Street. And I think the first movie I saw him in was Glory back in 1989. You know, Glory had not only Andre Brower, but Morgan Freeman, Denzel Washington. And Denzel actually won an Oscar for that particular film. But Andre Brower was one of those guys. His role on Homicide, Life on the Street, you know, where he played Detective Frank Pemberton. 7 seasons. That was a good series on NBC. Gritty, action-filled, pure drama. And then he took up comedy and moved over to Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And he still brought it to us. But this was a man that we saw movies, TV, on the stage. And again, condolences to his family. May he rest in peace. Andre Brower was definitely one of those actors that gave you 100% every time he stepped in front of the camera. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to talk a little bit about the noise that was being made about anti-Semitism and the president of Harvard, Sister Claudine Gay, who will retain her job. She had a meeting Monday with university leaders and other folks and a few doctors, you know, because it had been a very intense week over there. You know, she took criticism time about her response to anti-Semitism on her campus. She even got grilled by congressional lawmakers last week. And I can tell you honestly, a lot of that has to do with the turmoil going on in the Middle East. And the funny thing is, certain politicians can say what they want, and it's like swept under a rug. But here you had a black woman, president of a university, make a statement that some decided to push and put in the context they wanted it in. And somehow she's a villain. somehow she becomes public enemy number one, because you have like New York representative Elise Stefanik out there pushing a certain narrative. But the people over at Harvard said today that they affirm their support for President Gay's continued leadership at Harvard University. That's what the board said. Our extensive deliberations affirm their confidence that she is the right leader for their school and to help the community heal and to address very serious social issues they are facing. Her response to whether discussions of the genocide of Jews would violate Harvard's principles led to a group of bipartisan lawmakers to call for her ouster, as did the prominent wealthy alumni. Now, I always notice when it's a woman, especially a black woman, everybody shows up with torches and pitchforks. Whereas when it's a white man, it's like, well, you know, you got to kind of understand, no, we don't. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. She said she elaborated on her comments on social media and in an interview with the Harvard Crimson. There are some who have confused a right to free expression with the idea that Harvard will condone calls for violence against Jewish students. Let me make it clear. Calls for violence or genocide against the Jewish community or any other community or religious or ethnic groups are vile. They have no place at Harvard, and those who threaten our Jewish students will be held accountable. But nevertheless, Lee Stefanik and friends decided to investigate Harvard, MIT, and Penn. And Harvard Corporation, they acknowledged her missteps during the testimony and noted her apology. So many people have suffered tremendous damage and pain because of Hamas brutal attacks. And the university's initial statement should have been an immediate, direct, unequivocal condemnation. Calls for genocide are despicable and contrary to fundamental human values, the statement said. President Gay apologized for how she handled her congressional testimony and committed to redoubling the university's effort to fight anti-Semitism. So what more can you ask for? Harvard has said they're going to stand by her. So Elise Stefanik, who supports a candidate with some very evil intentions, who has already said, should he win the presidency, he wants a Muslim ban day one. But somehow, you cool with that. But you want to make President Gay to be out like some kind of vicious type person. I say no. Because that's not who she is. You took a statement and ran with it. Now, from what I understand, the woman who was the president of Penn resigned. She gave in to you. I wish she hadn't. And I guess you figured because she did, you would try to continue this. But Sister Gay ain't going nowhere. You can count that one. Down in the Lone Star State, state of Texas, they had a runoff in the election for mayor. And Texas State Senator John Whitmire is now the mayor-elect. And being the mayor-elect, he took a parting shot at Representative Sheila Jackson Lee after he won the runoff. He said that people want to go to work for him because we respect people. We don't bully people. This is what he said during his victory speech Saturday. My family taught me to treat people the way you want to be treated. And that works wherever you are, regardless of what community you're visiting with. Treat individuals like you want to be treated. And this came up because he was referring to Ms. Jackson Lee's controversial tirade last month, where she was caught on audio berating her staffers with profane language amid this. Was when I called Jerome, he only sits up there like a fat blah, 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 just talking about what he doesn't know. Both of y'all are blah, blah ups. This is the worst that I could have ever had put together. Two blah, blah, big blah, blah children. Idiots. Serve no purpose. Jackson Lee said in an angry voice in one part of the recording. Also, at the center of ridicule was a mistake she made earlier this month where she engaged her supporters to vote on the wrong day, urging voters to cast their ballot by December 7th, 2 days before the actual date of the runoff election. Whitmire ended up winning the election in a landslide, garnering 65% of the vote compared to her 34%. Whitmire has said that great city solved their problems. We will face challenges, but I see the opportunity and I need you to join hands with me. We'll meet our challenges and it'll be an opportunity to show the nation what the city of Houston can do. Now, I was married to a Texan. My wife was born right there in the city of Houston. Spent a lot of time there. They've had some decent mayors, and the mayor that's getting ready to leave, Sylvester Turner did some good things, although a lot of people won't admit it. But Houston is one of those cities that people tend to do things for the city in certain sections. The Bel Air area, they're going to always take care of them. Why? A lot of money there. A lot of Jewish money there. They're going to take care of them. The Heights, 5th and 3rd Ward, those folks over by the Ship Channel, they tend to catch as catch can. The city do for them when people put pressure on them. How do I know this? I have relatives in the Heights who are politically active and who give the city hell for not doing the things they know they're supposed to do. Now, when Sheila Jackson Lee addressed her defeat, she conceded the race while vowing to work with Whitmire to make Houston better. Now, apparently, when he announced that he was planning to run, his polling did very well and kept it moving. Well, I have a caller. Let me see what's going on. Caller, you online? Who am I speaking with, please?
Yeah, my name's Joe. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, Joe, I can hear you. How you doing this evening?
Okay.
Now, okay, Joe, go for it. What you got to say?
You're talking about two political parties being actually the uniparty. As I've said about these two parties, they're only different wings of the same vulture. They're both corrupt, and they don't care about America. That's my opinion.
Okay. And tell me why you reached that opinion, Joe.
I have a bad connection. Say that again.
Yeah, I was saying, what made you come to that opinion that it's just one party with two different sections?
The last few years, where when I've done my research about these particular parties, about what they, all these congressmen and senators have done, they've gone against the Constitution, but they certainly have gone against honesty and common sense. So I'm a person who believes that the government should only be there to protect the people against force, slander, contract disputes, and of course, enemies from within.
Right.
When they start getting involved in everybody else's business, such as marriage, I don't believe government should be responsible for making sure that somebody gets married or anything.
I agree with you on that.
Huh?
I agree with you on that.
So the further they stay away from us, the more we can control ourselves, choosing the people to be in government to protect the rights that naturally belong to us. Now, like I said, I'm not much on the Constitution because I don't like Article 1, Section 8, which actually gives the Congress way too much power because of its ambiguity.
Exactly. Exactly. And you brought up something that's very strong with me. I don't think that the government should be in a lot of our business. They should not be telling us who you're married, what your marriage is, what goes on in your bedroom. They should not be involved in women's health care. So, yeah, stay in that point.
Yeah. And the more they're involved in it, the more that they assume control over it, and the more that the corrupt politicians can make money off of the lobbyists who have something to gain with their, with their profits that they're going after. I happen to be a capitalist, and I think people in businesses should go after profits. But if you do so at the expense of the American people, then you're not, you're not on my list.
I wholeheartedly agree with you on that. In fact, I'm also one of those people that believe I'm old school. I can remember back in the 70s where Democrats and Republicans could stand there and argue all day long about certain things, but at the end of the day, come to some kind of understanding, work together for the betterment of the country, and then at the end of the day, go out and have a drink together. It is not like it is now where it has basically become two so-called parties fighting against one another over some of the dumbest stuff that makes no sense.
Well, on its face, I would rather have parties fighting each other on its face than agreeing with each other and going out to dinner, because when you go below the surface, they're still corrupt, regardless of whether the political theater is that they seem to get along or they seem to be battling each other, thus giving the constituents the impression that they're fighting for those constituents' rights. It doesn't
right.
matter to me. You know what I mean?
Well, it's like you said, it has become about making money. And I believe that's why so many politicians get in there and damn near stay for life. Because what else is you're going to find a gig this easy, where every once in a while you step in front of a mic, spout something, and keep it moving and to convince people to vote for you again?
Well, once you become an incumbent, it's relatively easy to still keep the shades down over people's eyes. Because once you fooled them, you fooled them. The incumbent usually gets reelected into office, I think it's around 80% of the time nationwide.
Yeah, they do.
People are in the matrix, but they don't realize it.
Well, you kind of sound like me about making sure that you do the best that you can and hold to your principles.
Well, yeah, I've tried to gather people together who are on Black Talk Radio. There's a circle of friends that we go around from show to show. They're conservatives. I'm a libertarian. And I've tried, in the main, to get the people together so that they, almost all of them, will always say, well, we have to get together. We have to do something. But people have to stand up to this. They won't. You know, that's why this is called Blog Talk Radio and not Blog Action Radio.
Right, exactly. Well, I definitely appreciate you calling in and bestowing that knowledge upon me. You have yourself a good rest of the evening and keep doing what you're doing.
Okay, take care now.
All right. All right, and I want to thank Joe for calling in. Appreciate that, because you never know. And it's always cool to hear another side that you normally do not hear. This man says he stands strong in the Constitution. I appreciate that. I appreciate that. I appreciate people who are honest, who speak their piece, and not afraid to say what they have to say. So my hat's off to Joe on that one. I appreciate you. Now, at this Monday, 45 announced on his social media platform, True Social, that he was not going to testify at his trial on Monday, after saying that was his plan. He was going to step up, step out, and let people know what was going on. Now, court officials also confirmed to Fox News that 45 had notified the court that he was not going to testify, and he said, as everyone knows, I have very successfully and conclusively testified in the corrupt Biden-directed New York State Attorney General's rigged trial against me. World-renowned experts, highly respected bank and insurance executives, real estate professionals, as well as others, both honest and credible, have stated clearly and unequivocally that I and my very successful company did nothing wrong. My financial statements are conservative, liquid, and extraordinary. This is what he posted. Now, the reversal of his testimony came after an accounting expert testified that the AG's case had no merit and that he didn't see any evidence of fraud in the financial statements that was being challenged by the AG. He said, I'm a top professor from NYU. His name is Stern. He said, if 45 was my student, he would get an A on his financial statements. I've never seen a statement that provided so much. They all have an ironclad disclaimer clause stating that the user must use their own due diligence and analysts, no reliance. The only fraud committed was the highly partisan and out-of-control judge and racist AG who promised that I will get Trump, which is what 45 exclaimed. Now, as we all know, New York AG Letitia James is seeking $250 million in damages and to bar 45 from conducting business in the state of New York. The Attorney General's complaint accuses him, his sons, and his company of fraudulently inflating the values of his properties to obtain more favorable loan and insurance rates. 45 went on to share more details about his reasonings for not testifying. They claim that Mar-a-Lago was only worth $18 million, when it's worth 50 to 100 times more that amount, in order to illegally reduce my values and make a fake case against me. They did that on other properties as well and wouldn't give me a jury. Likewise, the AG thugs do not want to acknowledge that I have paid almost $300 million in New York City and state taxes during the years in question. Importantly, I won the appellate division, which effectively ended most of the case, but the biased judge refused to accept their order, an unheard of first. Yeah, you know, if anyone but 45 said this, I might look at it and go, okay, maybe there's a possibility. But ladies and gentlemen, we all know He has the gift of gab. He is known for taking things and running with it, and known for pretty much putting in what he wants. Now, one of the other questions that have come up lately is that whether 45 can claim immunity from criminal charges stemming from his alleged interference in 2020 election. And the question for everyone else is, how will the Supreme Court decide? Now, Special Counsel Jack Smith made this appeal to the nation's top court, and it is largely about timing. He is hoping the Supreme Court will resolve the questions swirling around his immunity claims so that a lower court can stick to its March 4th trial date, or at least not blow past that date significantly. Under normal circumstances, the Supreme Court moves at glacier speed, but you know, there are signs that the justices might pick up this pace for this appeal, given the consequences at stake. And this is how it might work. The charges against 45 are tied to a basic allegation. He spread claims of election fraud he knew were false and pursued unlawful avenues to subvert the election results. Now, he pleaded not guilty and said in a court filing that he denies the truth of any allegations in the indictment. But before the lower courts can get those underlying issues, they got to resolve the immunity question. And if the Supreme Court finds that he has immunity, it would likely end Smith's case. Also remember, we all know that he is facing state criminal charges in Georgia tied to his alleged interference in the 2020 presidential election. Prosecutors there have charged him and several others with participating in a multi-pronged conspiracy to overturn the results, including interfering in Georgia's election process. And some co-defendants have already accepted plea deals in that case. So, what is the meaning of this presidential immunity? Relying in part to the 1982 Supreme Court decision that found presidents have immunity from civil lawsuits in some contexts, 45 has argued that immunity also extends. Federal judge in Washington smacked that novel theory down in a ruling against 45 this month. Now, whatever immunities a sitting president may enjoy, the United States has only one chief executive at a time. And that position does not confer a lifelong get-out-of-jail-free pass. That's what U.S. District Court Judge Tanya Chutkan wrote on December 1st. Former presidents enjoyed no special conditions on their federal criminal liability. So, and you know, we've heard him say it, hey, I can use this, but I got a feeling that particular gravy train has ran its course. Now, recently, former Congressman George Santos, who got put out of Congress past Friday, now it is said that he is negotiating to resolve his federal criminal fraud case. And that court filing went in yesterday. The parties are presently engaged in plea negotiations with the goal of resolving this matter without the need for a trial. That's what U.S. Attorney Breon Peace office put out. Apparently, Mr. Santos is scheduled to appear in court on Long Island for a hearing in the case today. He acknowledged in an interview on Monday, and he hasn't ruled out pleading guilty. And I don't know if he did or not. Now, the trial is not until September, and a plea is not off the table. So there are obviously considerations taking place, especially after what happened in Congress. And we'll see This is what George Santos said when interviewing with CBS2, referring to his expulsion from Congress earlier this month. Asked if he's afraid of going to jail, he said, "I think everyone should be afraid of going to jail. It's not a pretty place, and I definitely want to work very hard to avoid that as best as possible." Prosecutors also said they are seeking an earlier trial date in case the negotiations fail to produce a deal. The request is opposed by Mr. Santos' lawyer, who didn't respond to an email seeking a comment. He does face a host of charges that he defrauded donors to his campaign, lied to Congress about his wealth, received unemployment benefits while employed, and used campaign contributions to pay for personal expenses like designer clothing. He pleaded not guilty in October to additional charges that he made tens of thousands of dollars in unauthorized charges on credit cards belonging to some of his campaign donors. Now, he has not wasted any time looking to cash in on his infamy since becoming just the sixth lawmaker in history to be cast out by his colleagues in the U.S. House of Representatives. And that particular move has left Republicans with a razor thin majority in the chamber. Now, as many of you probably know by now, Mr. Santos, the 35-year-old Queens native, has an account on Cameo, where the public can pay him for a personalized video message. In a televised interview, Santos said he makes more money in a week on the platform than his annual salary as a congressman. But his life story unraveled before he was even sworn in office, and we all know how that went down. Now, we all know that a special election will be held February 13th to elect his House successor. Many people think that race will pit former U.S. Representative Thomas Sanuzzo, who's a Democrat, against one of the number one top Republicans. And who the Republicans are going to put up to run, we don't know yet. They haven't said. They haven't made a statement about it. So that's one of those things where you kind of sit, watch, and look. Because the truth of the matter is there's no telling who the Republicans may put out there. Now, for those of us who have been paying attention and following along, recently in Texas, Kate Cox, a mother of two, drew national attention after the state of Texas Supreme Court blocked her from getting an abortion after she got a fatal diagnosis about the fetus she's carrying. Now, to my knowledge, Mrs. Cox has left the state to get this procedure taken care of. And, of course, Senators John Cornyn and Ted Cruz spent today dodging questions about Kate Cox. And they were very skittish when they were asked to weigh in on Cox's situation, giving multiple opportunities to respond to questions from NBC News. Both senators, who are fierce anti-abortion advocates, they refused to comment. Cornyn said he was no state official, so I'm not going to comment on what state officials are doing. But you're a sitting senator for the state of Texas. Regardless of what state officials are doing, and considering your stance on abortion, you should have something to say about this, one way or the other. But instead, you decided to dodge the bullet. And Not only that, Mr. Cornyn, you used to sit on the Supreme Court of Texas. You was asked 5 separate times whether you supported the state move, and you kept doubling down on it not being your role to say anything. Ted Cruz, good old Raphael Cruz, the Canadian cowboy, he was pressed about the case. And, of course, he did not immediately respond, with no response. Now, Mrs. Cox found out when she was around 20 weeks pregnant that her fetus had been diagnosed with trisomy 18, a diagnosis that said was fatal to her fetus and posed a risk to her health and her potential to have another child. She sought a court order to receive an abortion under the medical emergency exemption law. A state judge said that she could terminate the pregnancy, but the Supreme Court overturned the ruling this past Monday, forcing her to leave the state to get this procedure taken care of. You know, what's sad about that is people get up on their soapboxes and claim that they care, that they want to put folks' health at the forefront. Yet, this woman was trying to do something about her health where her life was concerned. And what did she get? A slap in the face from very people that claim they want to help. And I noticed on the Texas Supreme Court, there are 3 women sitting in them seats. 3 women. And they voted against her. Now, they weren't the only ones, but 3 women on the panel. But others. And they voted against her. Now, I don't know if those women have children or not. But just the basic fact that they're women and they know what women go through. You would think somewhere, somehow, some empathy and common sense would come into play. Not only is this woman losing her child, it's very possibly she could lose her life. And I know they sitting there in judgment like, well, I have to look at myself in the mirror and the Lord may have told me no. I always find it funny. They never think about the mother and their health. They never think about these people. They always want to play the political game. How is this going to look? Instead of whether or not it makes real sense. You want to put someone's life at risk because you want to choose party over people. And Republicans tend to do that a lot. People who tend to think along that line believe party over people, and it's always the party, never the person. This woman's life at risk, and all these folks went against her. All these folks turn their back on her. And quite sure, they feel real good about it. Now, over in our House of Representatives, the Republicans are at it again. Representative Bob Good, Republican out of Virginia, has been elected the new chairman of the House Freedom Caucus. You know the House Freedom Caucus, that group of far-right, rabble-rousing troublemakers who tend to clash with GOP leadership every time you turn around. Now, the closed-door election took place last night, and the Freedom Caucus has usually been aligned with 45. They endorsed Ron DeSantis over the front runner, saying that as Florida governor, DeSantis demonstrated strength in the face of adversity and delivered effective results for every man, woman, and child in Florida. Now, DeSantis, who is a former House member, had been one of the founding members of the House Freedom Caucus. Good election underscores the group's independent streak, especially in a political environment where Republicans are reluctant to break with 45. Now, as you know, members of the House Caucus was behind the ouster. Good has said it is his privilege and honor to serve as the next House Freedom Caucus chairman. He says he'll focus on continuing the fight to reduce government spending, secure the borders, and defend the constitutional freedoms that we now have. Now, he ran unopposed and was recommended by the Freedom Caucus board, who will replace Chairman Scott Perry in January. Now, others who have served in that position, Jim Jordan, Mark Meadows. So, what's going to happen in January? That's what I want to know. Because remember, we're also facing trying to get the government funded in February. What's going to happen and where are we going to go? Where are we going to go? I'm going to say what I always say. Each one reach one, teach one. Those of you proficient with your arms, take your folks to the range, get them trained up, get them ready. Start a neighborhood watch, start a cop watch. Watch the people who are watching us. 2024 is but a few weeks away. People, it's time to get serious. It is time for us to start getting ready to vote. Read those sample ballots. Pay attention to what's going on. Talk to my people over at Get Out the Vote. Keep getting out the vote. Stand strong. Everyone take care, people. I'll be back at you this upcoming Friday. And who knows, maybe I might have a guest or two. Everybody take care. Stay strong. Until this Friday, I'll holler.